Welcome to the AFNI's Transformers podcast, where we take a deep dive into the dynamic landscape of Africa's energy and natural resources future. This podcast will explore not only the exciting developments in this field, but also the crucial intersection of energy transition and climate challenges within Africa's development trajectory.
Hello, welcome to the AFNI's podcast. My name is Suleiman Zakari. I'll be your host. And with me today is someone that I consider as my brother, I'm a very good friend, Mr. Uchena. Uchena, if you can say hello.
Oh, hello, everyone.
I mean, Uchena, I think we've been friends now for 2-3 years now. And surprisingly enough, we met through the AFNIS platform. And since then, we've kept in touch. In fact, you actually moved into my neighborhood before going into Saudi. How is everything over there? How's the family?
Yeah, everything is fine. And definitely, I think we met during the summit, I think 2022 edition. That's when we met. Everything is fine in Saudi. The weather is nice, better than the UK right now. So everything is fine. So yeah, we're enjoying it. This is the best time to be in Saudi. So I invite everybody to come around this time. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think you need to show me around maybe during the Formula One season in March.
Sure. Yeah.
So anyway, so today we're going to talk about, you know, your specialty, which is renewable energy, but in particular a bit about wind energy. But first, I would love to find out about you, what your journey was into going into renewable energy. As I saw, you have 15 years experience in the energy industry. But those first 5 years, I would say, were in the traditional oil and gas sector. So my question to you is, you know, we talk about energy transition, but we tend to focus on the energy systems rather than the human factor. So what made you transition from oil and gas to renewable energy?
Thank you very much, Sule. To be honest with you, my career journey has been going as time developed. I didn't really plan to be in renewable energy, to be honest with you. Yes, I started in the traditional oil and gas industry. I mean, in Nigeria, started off as a subsea pipeline engineer, you know, doing a lot of engineering and analysis for subsea pipeline, carrying crude oil, and all that. So actually, how I transitioned into renewable, as I mentioned earlier, it wasn't planned. It just happened. I was working for a company in the UK. I was just doing my piping riser analysis for this company. And again, an inquiry just came in from the company to bid into an offshore wind project. The project then was for Statoil, then now Equinor. So in the UK. So I was drafted into the team to prepare that bid proposal to the client. And we did that proposal. Luckily for us, we won the project. And naturally, I was part of the team to deliver the project. That's how I got into renewable. So before then, I had not even heard about offshore wind, to be honest with you. I was just that oil and gas person enjoying my work, doing all my engineering analysis and everything. That's how it happened. So when I finished that project for Statoil, it was a kind of an eye-opener. I started thinking, I said, this is the new industry, quite interesting, challenging project, but, you know, very fulfilling. So that's how I got into that. And then from then, I moved on to Iberdrola, offshore wind, team. And since then, I've not gone back. It's just been offshore wind, renewable energy in general. And yes, that's me. That's how my career has been.
Okay. I mean, so what would you say were the challenges moving from oil and gas to renewable energy? Were there any specific transferable skill that you would say, yes, it really helps you? And, you know, just to guide some of our listeners, if they're thinking of, you know, taking that next step in their career progression, what would you say is the one skill that you advise people to get?
Okay, yes. As I said, actually, it depends on where you're going to in renewable energy. But in general, renewable energy and oil and gas, there are lots of transferable skills. But specifically for offshore wind is more or less the same as oil and gas. The only thing that is different is that when you're building a project offshore for offshore wind, you're concerned basically particularly on high voltage electrical system. Whereas if you're doing the same project offshore for oil and gas industry, you're concerned with high pressure piping system. But every other thing external, like environment, is still the harsh environment offshore. All your materials, the structural design of your asset, they're still the same thing. You're still concerned about corrosion. You're still concerned about offshore environment, safety, and the rest of them. So if you are oil and gas personnel currently, you can easily transition into offshore wind without a lot of stress, to be honest. Depending on the kind of role you do, for structural engineers, for example, you don't even need the skills are just like the same thing that you need. Most of the people who work in the offshore industry, I can tell you that offshore industry globally right now, over 70% of people who work for offshore industry are people from oil and gas. So, but if you're talking about other renewable technologies like solar or, you know, other technologies, renewable technologies, that's where it's a bit, you know, the difference is a bit more clear and significant. But at the same time, it's still the same way you handle projects. You still originate projects, still commercialize conversation, contracting, supply chain. So all those skills, if you've been in the oil and gas side and you've been interacting, engaging with supply chain, you've been doing procurement activities, you've been having commercial conversation, that is the same thing you can also transfer in this other sector. So it's basically the same thing. A lot of transferable skills, really.
Oh, that's actually very interesting because I didn't realize that 70% of offshore wind professionals come from the oil and gas sector. So could you also, you know, using that stat, you could say offshore wind is best placed to be dominated by oil and gas companies? Or would you say, you know, because they already have the expertise of working offshore, they already have the technical know-how and maybe the equipment. So would you say that would be the natural progression of oil and gas companies if they were to look into renewable energy systems?
Of course, it's not that, would I say. I mean, that's exactly what is happening. If you look around the energy sector globally, with oil and gas industry coming into renewables, most of them are naturally, you know, going towards offshore wind because they've built a lot of capacity in offshore, delivering offshore projects. Not just the technicalities of delivering this project, but the amount of investment that is also required, the CapEx that is also required. I mean, in offshore wind, it's heavy on investment. It requires huge amount of money. And this is the kind of thing traditional oil and gas companies are already used to. They are already used to spending a lot of huge CapEx on developing offshore field. So it's a natural progression for them. Also, if you also think about hydrogen as a technology, hydrogen coming into the energy mix, oil and gas industry as well, the traditional oil and gas industry, a lot of them are looking into hydrogen as well. And this hydrogen has a lot of synergies with offshore wind as well. So offshore wind is a natural home for traditional oil and gas industries. And that is why you see companies like Total, Equinor, BP, a lot of these companies are already very big in offshore wind globally.
Okay, so let's, you know, try and bring it back to home. Let's say Africa, for example. So what would be the opportunities out there in Africa for offshore wind deployment? Because when I was doing research on this podcast, I couldn't find a specific project that was off the ground when it comes to offshore. But onshore, we have a few in Kenya, I believe, in Morocco and Namibia is looking into some offshore wind, onshore wind capacity. So what would be the opportunities for offshore wind in Africa?
Okay, wind in general in Africa hold a huge potential. I mean, there's been a lot of studies, a number of studies in this regard, from Global Wind Energy Council, from PwC, you've seen from World Bank. There's been a lot of studies around this, and each of the studies has been pointing at the opportunities we have in Africa for wind energy in general, and that's include offshore and onshore wind. But if we look at offshore specifically, we have good wind resources along the coast, some of the coasts in Africa, especially Namibia and South Africa. These are where you have huge, huge, good wind speed, in some cases more than 10 meters per second wind speed consistently around Namibia and South Africa. And this is what you need to generate a huge amount of wind energy. So yes, in Africa there's potential, but again, it's more in particular areas like I mentioned. Namibia is there, South Africa is there. I've been looking into offshore opportunities. There are no projects off the ground, like you said, already currently, but that activity is going on to get into that. But if you look at onshore, we have a number of onshore wind projects that are currently operating in Africa. You mentioned one already in Morocco. We have one in Morocco. We have projects in Egypt. We have in Senegal. We have in Ethiopia. Some of this, they are not huge capacity. I think the biggest capacity is 300 and something megawatts in Morocco. They are not huge capacity, but some of all these projects are there. They've been built. And they are currently operating efficiently. So the opportunities are there. In Senegal, I think 2-3 years ago, we had one commissioned in Senegal, 158 megawatt capacity project. And that project is still running today and doing well. So the opportunities are there. Onshore, offshore, we have huge huge potential. And I can tell you, the industry globally, they know these opportunities exist, and they are looking to develop these opportunities and invest in them.
So why aren't there currently any projects then off the ground? Because as you mentioned correctly, the resources are there. Like that's one of the many blessings that we have in Africa. We have the solar and we have the wind, and we also have a bit of geothermal. But why isn't it not deployed? Is that to do with regulation and policy? Or maybe what could you say the lessons from your experience in Europe in more developed wind markets? What can we incorporate to develop the sector a bit more?
Okay, yeah. And I assume you're talking specifically about offshore. So yes, we don't have any project offshore currently in Africa. Remember, this industry is pretty young industry globally. So there are so many markets, even developed from developed world, that are just still coming, just starting to key into this industry, offshore wind. Places like Taiwan, Australia, even America, United States of America, and so many other places are starting to come in. So in as much as offshore wind is much developed sector in Europe, talk about UK, Germany, Netherlands, and the rest of them. So the rest of the world, like Brazil and the United States, like mentioned earlier, some of these markets are still just coming in. Even Australia, some of these markets are still coming in. So Africa also is one of those potential markets to come in. So I wouldn't say, we don't have any project yet in Africa or anything. Yes, we don't have any project. But then, even if we want to start developing it right now, challenges are there. There are so many massive obstacles that can actually hinder that originating a project, offshore wind project in Africa. One of the challenges, of course, I mentioned, this sector is very huge on investment. It requires huge investment to go into to develop an offshore wind project. And for Africa to attract this sort of investment, there are some political issues hindering this attraction, security, and the rest of them, as example to attract this level of investment. But that's one. Again, our grid system, grid infrastructure, is not also very expansive as it is right now, and even very robust as it is. Offshore wind is not like solar, where you develop probably 10 megawatts or, you know, things like that. Offshore wind is usually very huge capacity projects. So it requires a very robust and, you know, grid system to transmit this power you generate to where they are needed. So we don't really have that grid infrastructure that is able to take on this level of capacity. So for offshore wind to go and to develop, first of all, we need grid investment, investment in grid infrastructure to expand it. And also regulation, like you mentioned, we don't really have that regulatory framework, but all these things are things in progress. First of all, the government has to show the way and willingness to really develop this industry. Then the regulatory activities will come in. Good enough, we have some working regulations and everything in the developed market. All we need to do is carry this template, come to our jurisdiction and make it specific to our terrain. That's it. So yeah, all those things are already there, all the challenges facing the industry. You know, but like I said, if we really show the willingness to do that, of course, the global market investors will come in. There are things that are already working for developed world, where this market is already developed. All we need to do is transfer those in our jurisdiction. But before that will happen, the government will show willingness to push the industry forward through investment in grid, through political stability, through, you know, doing all those things that will really attract investors to give them that assurance that their investment will be safe in our continent.
Okay. I mean, so besides, you know, the power to plug into the grid that you get, one of the benefits from offshore wind, what would you say is the economic benefit that will, you know, that government might get for them to push offshore wind as a policy?
So many benefits. First of all, economic benefit, like you said, this is in Africa. We need power. Africa is one of the places where energy poverty still exists. There are so many other places around the world, but in Africa, we know we need power to we need electricity to power the economy. We need this electricity. So once we have electricity in Africa, a lot of things, economic activities will come up from there. So it's benefit. Another one is employment. This is a new industry that will employ huge amount of people. I don't have the figures currently offhand, but I know offshore wind, the number of people working in offshore wind globally is continuing to increase. And even, as I mentioned earlier, oil and gas people, a lot of people who were laid off from oil and gas industry, they found natural home in offshore wind sector globally. So this is an industry that is generating a lot of economic activities in the UK, in America, currently in Germany and elsewhere where this industry is really booming. So there are so many things the government stand to gain if they go into this or if they support this industry.
I mean, so a couple of years back, like let's say in 2021, there was an issue in Texas. I'm not sure if you're aware, where they blamed offshore wind for causing the grid to collapse. You mentioned it's different from solar, obviously. So what would you say are the potential drawbacks of offshore wind, especially for a grid that we have in Africa, a less developed grid?
Okay, generally, renewable energy. Generally, you have the intermittency of renewable energy, which means they don't generate round the clock, just like your gas plant, where your gas plant, if you keep supplying gas, it keeps generating energy. So renewable energy generates when the wind is blowing for wind energy and when the sun is shining for solar. So this intermittency in generation, it doesn't come where you need some... some amendment in your grid to handle this intermittency. It causes some frequency issue on the grid. So that's number one. So for your grid infrastructure, grid system to accept renewable energy in general, whether it's wind or solar, there has to be that investment in it to bring it up to standard to take on this generation. So that's one. Also, I mentioned that your grid as well has to be, the capacity for your grid has to be enough to take this huge amount of generation that is coming from offshore wind. Most of the offshore wind projects, you see 500 megawatts capacity projects, and now, even these days in the UK, you see 1,400 megawatts capacity projects. You see, you know, gigawatt capacity projects of offshore wind. So your grid really needs to be at that level for it to accept this generation. Say, take, for example, in Nigeria. In Nigeria, we have installed capacity in Nigeria is just over 12,000 megawatts in installed capacity. But then the generation, the peak generation we have is just around 5,000 out of that installed capacity. So now, but that 5,000 is what costs more from time to time. We hear of last year, I think a number of times we heard about grid collapse. That which means the grid cannot handle 5,000 capacity putting on it. For whatever reason, the grid, we had issues with grid collapse a number of times in Nigeria last year. So now, and that is 5,000 megawatt capacity you're pushing into it that is causing that collapse. Now, one single offshore wind in the UK, there's this project in the UK, East Anglia 3. I was part of the project at the early days. East Anglia 3 alone is 1,400 megawatts. So if you have three or four East Anglia 1 similar to East Anglia 3 projects, then it's already more than the generation that is causing our grid collapse. You know, so that's the point. It's huge amount of megawatts you're pushing into the grid. So there has to be that infrastructure, grid infrastructure expansion to be able to accept this generation.
We're going to take a short break now and hear a message from our partners.
The African Natural Resource and Energy Investment Summit, or AFNIS, is an annual three-day summit held in Abuja, Nigeria. Leaders of the mining, power, energy and agricultural sectors meet to discuss strategies on how to better utilise and develop Africa's abundant natural resources. The 2024 edition seeks to build upon the previous two summits, with this year's focus on how African nations can leverage their natural resources to foster economic growth, whilst addressing the challenges of climate change and ultimately alleviate poverty in their countries. The summit will be held from the 4th to the 6th of June, 2024 at the ICC in Abuja. Details can be found at afnissummit.com.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. So you mentioned the one that you were working on, the East Anglia Project 3, 1,500 megawatts.
1,400
megawatts. Yeah. How much is that in dollars? How much investment will that be required to build sort of project?
I think East Anglia 3 projects was, currently offshore wind, there's this, you know, kind of investment rule of thumb, if you like. Offshore wind is currently around $1 million per megawatt of investment. That's, you know, approximately, you know, plus or minus. But just assume it, is that correct?
So that's very similar to solar projects.
That's only the turbine supply. Mm. I think that's just the turbine, yes. That's just the turbine. Offshore wind turbine supply is approximately 1 million per megawatts, which means 1,400 megawatts, you're looking at over around $1.5 billion of turbine investment, turbine alone.
Wow.
Then turbine, you need to get that turbine. This turbine is the generators. Then when you generate, you need a lot of cables, inter-array cables that will collect all this, your generation and put it to your offshore substation. You need your offshore substation as well that will then process this and then send it to through export cable to your onshore substation. In the offshore substation as well, it will also, again, be prepared and processed and be prepared to be sent to the grid network, transmission network. So you have the export cables, you have your turbine, you have your offshore substation with all the electrical equipment within the offshore substation, you have your onshore substation with all the electrical equipment within that place as well. So, again, like I said, the biggest percentage of the capex for developing the project is from the wind turbine itself. And I've just said that currently is around $1 million per megawatts for plus or minus for turbine alone. This order supporting other thing that go into that, I mean, I can't just put a figure on them right now, but for a 1,400 megawatt capacity project and you want to develop, if 1.5 billion is already your is already going to your turbine supply contract, then I would imagine maybe another 2 billion for the rest of the supporting infrastructure you need to support that turbine generators. So for a project of 1.4, like I mentioned, it's Anglo One, I would imagine around $3.5 billion
required
of investment. Yeah.
Wow. So looking at these figures, what would be, you know, minimum project size that would be viable for anyone to develop in Africa?
First of all, sometimes when you start developing the project and start building your business case, sometimes the higher you go in capacity, the better for your project business case. But it doesn't work like that always. There are sometimes you want to build 1 gigawatt capacity. 1 gigawatt is 1,000 megawatt capacity project. You might have a better LCOE there than building maybe less capacity projects. Maybe if you want to build 800, you might have bigger LCOE. So what you do at the beginning of the design of the project, so people who then do this project design at the initial stage, we do a lot of iterations, look into different capacities. First of all, you have to do resource assessment in the field where you want to build this, where you have the right to build the offshore wind project. So you know the maximum capacity you can build in that field. So when you know the maximum capacity you can build in that particular field, you can then do iteration to know, because I said, it's not always the maximum capacity might not necessarily mean the best business case for you. It might be a case that you can build 1,000 capacity, but if you remove 200 in it and build 800, you get better LCOE. Levelized cost of energy, which is the cost of your energy you are generating. So, yeah, plus you just there's no fixed amount. You say this is the fixed amount where it becomes viable. No, there's economy of scale works, yes, but there's always that optimization where that optimal value for a particular location is not like across everywhere. This is the optimal value. No, it's location specific. When you get to your location, you know what is possible there. You do all the iteration, you do all the, you know, and get the optimal point where you get the best levelized cost of energy.
Okay. So, you know, so hearing you, learning from you about the figures, what it takes to develop an offshore wind project, is it fair to say that offshore wind is more on the level of, let's say, a hydroelectric power plant, as opposed to solar energy or solar project, because of the requirement of the investment required and the size of the project to make it viable?
Say that again. You say, is it fair to say what?
Is it fair to say that offshore wind energy is more similar to hydroelectric power plants or development of a hydro power plant, as opposed to solar plants or solar energy systems? For example, you could develop a 1 megawatt project in northern Nigeria and make it viable. But I don't think you can develop even a 5 megawatt offshore wind project and make it viable.
No, you can't. There's no way you can develop a 5 megawatt capacity project and make it viable. Again, it depends on the location. For example, if you have an existing offshore transmission that you want to connect to, you know, good, that takes away the cost of building a new transmission. Like the UK now, in the UK, they are beginning to look around building an offshore grid where, you know, they have a central offshore connections transmission system, and new projects will just come in, plug into that. That way, you don't need to build transmission infrastructure specifically for your project. That way, maybe a couple of turbines might become viable. But in a case where you have to build a standalone transmission, offshore transmission for that project, I mean, scale, economy of scale has to come in. You have to get to a level of capacity to make your project viable. And that capacity is not 5 megawatts, it's not 10, it's not even, again, depending on where it is, how far away the location is from the length of export cable you want to build, all those come into play. But again, yeah, it's not a project that you come to generally. You say you're building 10 megawatts or you're building, except it's a pilot project. When you do piloting, you don't really look at viability. You just want to test technical viability and things like that. So in terms of if you want to compare it to solar, of course, solar, you can even do less than 1 megawatt capacity. People do less than 1 megawatt and it's viable. Because solar, most of the solar projects, they are built at the point of consumption. So you don't really invest a lot on transmission infrastructure. Also, if it's utility scale solar, most of them, they are sited where you can easily connect to the grid infrastructure. You don't need to build a very long, lengthy transmission system to connect to grid infrastructure. The good locations for solar projects are usually where you have your connection point very close to your project site as much as possible. Also, solar doesn't necessarily need, offshore solar that is coming, floating solar coming into this, coming in now as part of the technologies. So, but aside that, the real solar that we currently have now, you don't have need for offshore transmission. Offshore transmission is very, very expensive to build. So in that case, your project is always, mostly small scale projects in solar can be viable. Also, you don't even need solar projects. You don't develop them over years. You don't have a lot of upfront development costs. You don't incur a lot of CapEx and things like that. So, yes, they're similar thing. And if you look at hydro as well, hydro also hydro is a very developed technology. You might build small scale hydro, again, where you can either consume it locally or where you can easily connect to the grid without having to run a very lengthy transmission. Also, you don't necessarily need to run. You don't need to run offshore transmission as well. So all these are very different from offshore wind. You can do minimal capacity projects in some of these technologies, and your project is viable. You can't say exactly the same thing for offshore wind.
Right. I mean, we could continue on talking all day, but I think you have other plans. It's already late where you are right now. So maybe I can allow you to have the final word and say, where do you see the industry going in the next 5 to 10 years, especially in Africa?
Yes, the industry is expanding rapidly around the world. And for Africa, South Africa and Namibia, these two places are very interesting and they are places to watch in the near future. South Africa and Namibia for offshore wind, both fixed bottom foundation and floating foundation. These two countries, these two places are places to watch for offshore wind. I foresee the first project, offshore wind project in Africa, coming from either of these two places.
Thank you very much. And finally, so would we get to see you this year again in Abuja for the third edition of AFNIS?
Sure, give me invite. Invite me. Send me details and everything. Let me plan ahead of time.
We'll send you the details, and we'd love to have you once again.
Sure.
Right, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Time.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you.
And thanks for the insightful comments that you've given our listeners today, and hope to have you back soon again.
Sure, my pleasure. Thanks very much. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of AFNIS Transformers. We hope you enjoyed it. you can visit our website at partners.afnissummit.com/transformers to learn more and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. We'll see you again soon. Take care.